This is 101.9 CFRC.
And Sebastian Diaz.
And I'm Parker Mott. And you're listening to Synesthesia.
At 6:16, the shrapnel barrage will lift. We'll have 4 minutes to clear about 300 yards of no man's land.
That would be the easy part, right?
Mrs. Langdon's little boy run right into a German trench.
It was in my power to send people home and start with me.
Now you listen to us. It's the best way you're going to get out of this alive.
Sergeant's asking for me. I'm filling canteens.
Filling canteens.
He asks again. I'm in the latrine. Wherever he's not, that's where I am.
For our Canada Now segment, we're going to be talking about 21 Brothers, which just finished up at the screening room. It's very exciting. And today we have the privilege to interview Michael McGuire and Brent Nurse. Brent Nurse was the assistant director and visual effects on the film, and Michael McGuire was the director. Well, just to give a brief overview of the film, is basically about the 1916 battle at Corselet in France, and the 21st Battalion was working in the trenches. A lot of casualties in this war is known for... Actually, it was the first time they actually introduced tanks, apparently. We're just going to sort of get into the film, I guess, right away. Let's not beat around the bush. When did this idea come about for 21 Brothers? What was the interest, especially with this particular battle?
The idea for the film came about before the specifics of the battle. I had an idea to do a single-shot film set around a battle, but I hadn't chosen a battle, hadn't looked that deeply into it. We met with Clayton Garrett, our screenwriter, and Clint Tippin, one of the producers, and Brent. We batted around some ideas, and we found this particular battle about the local battalion from Kingston, and so that sort of hit it home for us, that we wanted to tell a more local story because of the way we were shooting it with local actors and local crew, so that we found this battle that fit really well, and we could keep it as local as possible with the... So the subject matter was about the local battalion as well, the 21st.
Now, why did you choose to cast and film in Kingston? What were the reasons behind that?
We knew we had the talent to do it in Kingston. It's a great city between the universities, the local community. There's a ton of talent here in town, and we knew we could get the people involved. If we could get them involved, we knew the talent was there to pull off a film like this.
Excellent.
And land enough to build a 300-foot trench.
Yes.
Yeah. For free.
How long did that take to build the trench?
Well, we cheated. We used a backhoe. We didn't actually dig it by hand like they would have back then. But it took 3 days to dig it. But then it took a month and a half to actually do the sandbags to build the command post.
Longer than that. It's a lot of work.
Wow, yeah. A lot of work.
Yeah. We didn't finish it till started it the summer before, and we let it weather over the winter, and then we finished set dressing and finished some final construction on it the week before we shot.
I did notice that with the special effects in general, how you had to coordinate everything in terms of having the explosions come down, and there's actually a scene when someone gets shot and you have to make it seem really realistic. What's the key to doing that? What'd you guys do there?
Rehearsal.
Yeah, rehearsed it.
Trusting in the crew that we had. Like, there are some visual effects explosions, but they're all keyed off of real ones that we had, and they're not changed at all, the real ones, and they're just these wonderful air canisters and coordinate timing, you know. Just call it the takes. Now Mike was also in it. Mike's an actor, and the director is also in it, so he had to rely on...
Oh, were you the character who had beef with the sergeant?
I wasn't planning on doing that. An actor had to be replaced sort of halfway through the rehearsal process, and because I was there and had to be there, I just sort of took over the part rather than trying to get someone new in. But it allowed me to be in the trench as well to help coordinate something. So some things actually did go wrong on the takes, but we managed to... People just help each other out, and we managed to get by and not have it noticed on the screen.
So after the screening, you did a little Q&A session, and you were talking about how you coordinated all the shoot, talking via headsets, and you used a lot of cues via sound. And can you just describe how you went about doing that, and like how much coordination was involved filming this?
The first thing we did was we had production assistants who watched visually. They could watch visually from above the trench, and so they were moving props around and making sure actors were getting ready for their cues. But the biggest difficulty was with Clint, the cinematographer, and Brent Nurse, who was the assistant, and he can explain how they...
Yeah, we also have some of the production assistants' headphones for the sound, so you know we get our cues from script and reads. 2 months of rehearsals, about, like 3 days a week.
6 weeks, yeah.
Or 6 weeks rehearsals, yeah. 3 days a week. And then, so the actors would do their thing. Clint is the cameraman. We had the rig, like we had a Steadicam that we picked up for it. And his rig, and I walked behind him for 6 weeks with the script in my arm and my pen, and we had our own little system. I love looking at the script now because it's just a mess. But, you know, just notes. And what I was writing was the notes that I would be telling him through headset. Mm. So he and I were just hooked up directly so that we made sure that it didn't sound, you know, just us talking. And I'd just be like, literally be like, go left.
Yeah.
Or don't forget, stay on clay. You know, just read the whatever. This are our own notes because... You know, because sometimes the hardest part with it, direction-wise, was that, or for cinematography, is that sometimes, you know, an actor goes off, right? Because we have people walking out of a shot, and then behind them is the next shot. Mm-hmm. So you'd have to occasionally, you know, naturally, sometimes, too, you get caught up in all this. Clint may be like, oh, maybe I'll go this way, but and forget, you know?
Yeah.
So they'd be like, don't forget, stay on clay, or don't forget, stay on mic. Or, but yeah, we just rehearsed it like crazy. And like I said, just I sat there in my, in our, we had like a little sound booth area where the sound guy had his monitor, and then the main production manager had hers, and then I was sitting there with mine, and I had my headset and my script and all my notes, and just going through that and just quietly telling Clay, we just, or reminding Clint, you know, where to go, what to do, and rehearsal though. 6 weeks, 3 days
six
a week.
Yeah.
So it seems like this is about a famous battle, but at the same time, so we thought it was kind of funny. It feels like you guys were doing your own battle yourself on the headset. All right, go here, go there. It's Commander commanding his army.
It felt like that on set a bit too, because of the time of year we shot. We wanted to shoot in April when there was no leaves on the trees, everything was looking dead. And so because of the temperatures and because of the area where the set was, we never got it. The actors didn't get into the set until the day before we were shooting. Mm-hmm. So for them, it added to the film that way, because they got thrown into this. All of a sudden now they're in uniforms, they're carrying guns, they're in this mud pit in the middle of nowhere. So that created a bit of stress for them, because they weren't used to, you know, being in those settings, those surroundings. So I think it added to that, sort of giving them the feeling of being out of place, like the soldiers would have been, and being stressed.
Definitely.
And we had to do that logistically, but I think it actually helped in the long run as far as the performances went.
And as far as like the filming went, like Francis Ford Coppola goes to film Apocalypse Now, and like all the worst things possibly happen. Like, was there any like really glaring things that popped up? Like, oh god, we really need to fix this, or
lots.
Yeah,
yeah.
We did three takes. We planned on doing four takes, so this two on Saturday were, you know,
and
there's
one test on a full dress on Friday,
yeah,
right.
Like, which is the first day we were all out at the trench. But yeah, so like the first couple takes we couldn't use, because all of a sudden we'd see sound guys above the trench with their boom mics, you know, and just because for various reasons they were out of position, or Clint's camera got a little high, or
that dreaded boom mic.
Yeah,
it's like
exactly.
The bane of it.
Yeah. Well, some of it we could certainly get rid of it digitally, but I think we only had to like move a frame a little bit to just knock somebody's head out in the final cut, because we got it so down that no one was in it, because we could have saved one of those takes, but it just ended up being Sunday was the best take.
And there was other issues, you know, and even in the take that you would have seen the other night that's showing at the screening room, there were mistakes that happened. It's just that Clint or the actors covered and that was one of the things Clint had to, if an actor left early or came into a scene early, he had to be able to adjust or make room. And that it wasn't exactly the way we had it planned. Some of the shots were a little bit different, some of the lines got mixed up, the actors just went with it, they didn't
That's good. They improvised it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, they excellent. Just improvised, as did Clint. And
now, when I see a movie like this that is such a long take, I think of when I watch a movie where there's a long take, I always think of like what the filmmakers, like what the feeling is when they're doing this. And can you just describe, like, is there any sort of way you can maybe explain it to me in like in any sort of means to how it feels when you're doing something like this?
Brent and I probably have two different versions of that, because basically, once we got onto the set and started doing the takes, I was in the trench trying to be an actor more than more of a director. So for me, it was a little more stressful, because once I got in there and the film started, I had no control.
Yeah, okay.
I really had no control. I had to do my part. If a couple of problems came up, I could try and fix them. If it wasn't you know, if I wasn't in the scene or something. So for me, it was just a lot of sitting there stressing, basically crossing my fingers and hoping everything was going well down at the other end of the trench, and I had no idea until I saw the footage afterwards, whereas Brent was probably a completely different feeling.
I loved it just in terms of, like, from my previous projects and stuff that we've worked on together, it's like, oh, there's another shot to do. Oh, there's another take. Oh, that's not quite right. This, it was kind of nice. It's stressful as heck to, like, try to plan this out.
Right.
But when you're doing it, that's all you've got. Mm-hmm. You know, like, that's the plan. Like, we had discussed, like, I remember one night we said, we were stressing a little bit, thinking, can we get this done? And I think I said, you know, I can do a shot list right now. So if we have to do some pickups, just in case, Mike's like, no, we're locked in, we're doing it one shot. But yeah, so once it starts rolling, once we say action, we're not going to stop for 95 minutes, you know? So it was kind of nice in that way, because in my headphone, I was the most comfortable, because I was practically laying down, you know, because we're trying to keep our heads down, too. Because we had to be kind of in my line, but also out of the camera shot.
Right.
So I was just nice and comfortable and talking on the headphone, whispering sweet nothings to Clint. No.
But yeah, it was
trying to make him laugh.
And it was different. It was definitely different in the stress levels, because normally you would have the luxury of doing 12 takes, as many takes as you might need, knowing until you get your shot. And we didn't have that luxury. We had to hope that nothing drastically went wrong that we couldn't either fix in post or would look okay. And
I mean, the good thing is, like, once you're done with it, there's no post. As far as editing, you don't have to go through that, like, rigorous process.
Decisions.
No decisions.
You know, except for sound, we did edit sound, but it was a little quicker post because of it. Yeah.
To me, it's the most tiresome part of the filmmaking process.
Yeah, to be honest, though, I was happier being at the computer working on the post after, you know, rather than sitting in the trench filling 1,000 sandbags.
Yeah. I know one of the I know one of the actors wrote the screenplay.
Clayton Garrett. Yeah.
Clayton Garrett. There was a lot of great history in the screenplay. Was any of that based in reality? Was kind of relationship that the writer had to a person in the battle?
There's no personal relationship to the battle. Clay, based on the idea we had, Clay wrote a script, and we had a historian, Aaron Miedema, who had recently graduated from Royal Military College in World War I history. So he did a lot of research for us, but Clay basically wrote the script around the initial idea, and then we handed it off to our historian, Aaron, and me as a director looked at it. There were some things we had to change because we couldn't have accommodate the single shot. Aaron added a lot. So we tried to make it as historically accurate as possible. The time and the scenes about the times, the goals they had to reach, the sugar factory, all that was historically accurate. The sub-story about the kid being underage wasn't from that battle, but it was based on an actual...
So there was a 14-year-old kid in the battle. Wow.
Yeah, he was in a different battle. I think it was 6 months later or something. We took that story and just brought it into ours. But that was based on actual events as well.
And so getting to the film in terms of its inspiration from other films, because, like, the war genre in general in cinema is so incredibly vast. Like, you can do so much with it. We're going to be talking later on the show about war cinema and what so many directors have done with it. And in particular, what came to our mind when we were watching the film was Russian Ark, which is also in one shot. The famous tracking shot in Atonement from a few years ago when they're in World War II and there's, like, the horses are being executed and there's guys singing in the gazebo and everything.
Yeah.
Was there any other films that 21 Brothers, what you were sort of thinking of when you were making the film?
For us, it was more about telling the story of the soldiers. So rather than looking at other war films or action films, I was looking at more of the grittier films, films like The Road.
Right. Okay.
You know, just a darker look.
Yes.
Because I wanted to tell the story of these men, really show what they went through, the hardships, what they sacrificed. So I was looking more films like that, the darker films, more dramatic films than actual war films specific, from my perspective anyway.
Would you like to talk about the sound and, like, maybe the score a little bit?
So I know you were thinking, it reminded me a lot of how Paths of Glory and stuff, where you were going about.
Well, like in Paths of Glory, a constant reminder that they are in battle, even in moments where they're not, you know, it doesn't seem that apparent, is the sound. There's always the sound of artillery in the background. And this, you kind of focused on the score a little bit more. I was wondering what your decisions were in that.
Well, first of all, we lucked out with great music guys. Brent Holland did the majority of the soundtrack. And again, it was more we had thought about doing more with the explosions and that type of thing, and always having that in the background. But I wanted to use music to sort of highlight some of the more dramatic and not just the dramatic, but the more comedic moments as well, to have the music follow that flow that we tried to get in the script, showing the different sides of life. And Brent Holland is a new guy to Kingston, actually. He was based out of Montreal and Sudbury. And we just sort of lucked into him, and he did a fabulous job. Yeah. And then we had Michael George did the final song on the end credits. It's a song called The Miracle, right. Which was set in World War. The song's actually set in World War I as well, which I just thought was a great song to end the film with.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there is sort of a level... the ending, there was sort of a level of claustrophobia when you're watching it. Like, it never peaks over. You never get to see what's on the other side. I was trying to do this a lot and started seeing. It teases you, and I like that. It was sort of, you stay in the point of view of the people in the trench. It doesn't cheat, and I really like that. And I want to get to the tracking shot, because that's the thing that really sticks out about that film. And a lot of people, when they see films like that, are going to say self-indulgent. They're just trying to show you, look how we can do this all in one shot. Mm-hmm. And I think what tracking shots are so good at is they show you the spontaneity, they show you the rhythm of life, they show you how it works without cutting up into little pieces. So what were you going for in 21 Brothers? How do you think it transcends its world by using a tracking shot? Would it have been different? How do you think it would have been different if it was cut?
I think it would have been very different if it had been cut.
Yeah.
We could have done more. We could have shown above the trench, and we could have anyway in the single track if we really wanted to.
Yeah.
But one of the reasons for doing the single track was to keep it real, like to try and pull the audience in.
Mm-hmm.
And that was the tough thing, was making it flow enough that they didn't get tired of the single take, but kept them in there. Because the single take, I was hoping, would keep them more into the story. It would, being in the trench would make them feel claustrophobic. There's no way out. There's no break, right, for the audience. There's no break for the guys in the trenches. And I was hoping that would come across using the single take.
Well, also with single takes, I really like this about your film, was it's all in real time, essentially.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
You know, it's from the moment where you see it to the moment where it's the 0 hour where they have to go over. I think that really added to the film. You know, the film, when you edit, it's time is kind of lost, but when you do one take, it's every second counts, and you know, I thought it was a really great choice.
Yeah, so. And I like, it's like you're remembering, but at the same time you're participating in the memory. I like that aspect, that you can just sort of just go with it, and it's very involving in that sense.
We had a lot of artistic ideas for why we wanted to do that, but there was certainly on the production side of it, we knew we could plan a shoot. We know, like, our talents are definitely lay in, like, rehearsing, planning. We knew we could structure that.
Mm-hmm.
Very hard sometimes, though, to be able to pay a lot of people to come out for 2 weeks in a row, or, you know, to shoot multiple takes, to shoot a regular schedule. So in a way, this is another way that helped us, too, is to make our decisions that it's one weekend.
Yeah.
You know, everything is this, as long as you can get them in for the rehearsing and the proper schedule, as long as there's at least 3 or 4 of us that are just working constantly to get this ready to go, then 2 days. You know, we have 2 days of, you know, on the set and feeding people and doing it, and then it's sitting in the chair later and working on the sound, as opposed to, weeks and weeks. So,
and the cast really helped with that. I mean, they were, you know, we got a good cast, a good talented cast, and we actually focused more on looking at theater actors who we knew could do that. Mm-hmm. They're used to getting up and doing a 2-hour show every night in front of a live audience.
Well, actually, one of my housemate's girlfriends knows the character who played the young man.
Oh,
he's
yes.
a good friend of one of my housemate's girlfriend. I know that's a little bit of a side note, but I just like
he yeah. was great. It was one of his. That was one of his first. Yeah. He hadn't really done much. He was, I think he turned 16 during rehearsals. Mm-hmm. He was playing the 14-year-old. But yeah, he was great. It was one of his first acting jobs. But he blew us away in the auditions, and we didn't have a second thought about casting him after the auditions and callbacks.
Mm-hmm.
Why do you think cinema's depiction of World War I, especially Canada's role in it, is so overlooked?
I've been thinking about this a lot, because I watch a lot. I mean, we're all war film junkies. We have thoughts about a World War II film, too. But I always just think, like, World War I just is such, like, when it comes to Hollywood, World War I is just such another world. Mm-hmm. Like, they don't look, like, it looks like somebody else's war. Like, you know what I mean? Like, for young people, and when they're pumping out movies from Hollywood, World War II is an action film. in terms of how it's shown, but also the uniforms, the outfits, where there is almost a little bit more of that old style fighting in World War II.
And it's very, like, fast paced, and everything's moving.
I always say it's because they had knickers. You know, because we can't deal with it. We like pants. But no, I think it's just World War II is just used more because, well, it's America. I mean, Hollywood.
I think
film industry, Hollywood. So
I think that's one of the biggest things, is that the United States didn't play much of a part in World War I. They came in quite late in World War I.
And They played a big part, don't worry.
Yeah. And then, but in World War II was sort of their war.
Mm-hmm.
I think also from a, especially from a film point, is World War II was good and evil. Yeah. It was Hitler against,
true.
You know, it was there was good and evil.
Yeah, you
World
had the
War
good
one,
guy, you had the bad guy.
Yeah, yeah. You knew who everybody
very
was.
The really, the bad really
guy.
Bad.
Yeah, yeah. Where World War One was simply a battle of, it was, you know, politicians and royalty that were pissed off at each other and caused millions of people to die for their countries. There was no real rights and wrong. People were going to war to fight for their country.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I can't look at either side and blame anybody, where I think with World War II you can sort of put an onus on why things.
And that's what I like about 21 Brothers is that, like what Sebastian was saying, it's in the now. It's not, you're not trying to tinker with like artificial drama. There's just certain things just sort of happen. They just sort of develop, and there's a character revealed that he was from prison or something.
Mm-hmm.
There's these gradual things just slowly happening under the surface, and that's what really sort of pulls you into it, and you're just sort of slowly pulls you into its drama, and I really like that. And I think there's another film that came out about World War One in Canada by Paul Gross called Passchendaele, which I remember that went for more of a melodramatic angle. And so this film is different in the sense, and that's what I sort of thought was really interesting. How you brought a new angle.
Was there a love story in Passchendaele?
Yes, there was.
Okay.
There was, I'm
just thinking of other World War One movies, and I'm thinking of A Very Long Engagement, and that had a love story tie into it too. So,
and that's the thing, we wanted to make a real film, or you know, tell the real stories. Yeah. And I think, you know, we could have put in more action. You know, because there was fighting going on, obviously. So we could have done more of that, but we wanted to show what they were going through, the sacrifices they made just day to day. Like, when they enlisted, when they signed up, you know, university students, they were farmers, they were bankers, 18, 22, 24 years old, that went and did this. When they signed up, they were there for the duration. They were there for 4 years, unless they were killed or wounded bad enough they couldn't fight.
Mm-hmm.
And so we wanted to show that, just the sacrifice of living in a trench for that long, let alone risking your life every day.
Well, like my grandfather, you know, signing up a year early, you know, getting somebody to sign up that he was a year older.
Yeah.
In order,
just, you know, what do we do these days? You know, these guys are running out after war at 70. You know, my grandfather lying so he can go early. You know,
my grandfather, during World War II, he was like 15 and he volunteered for the Indian Air Force.
Oh, yeah.
Like, what's up with grandfathers and just...
Cool. That's a cool story, though.
Yeah, I know. He's a wild man.
So, yeah, at least you get your pilot's license out of it.
Yeah, and not to throw a curveball at you guys, but we sort of have a question generally about you guys as filmmakers. Like, on this segment, Canada Now, we talk about Canadian films and how they're starting to break out of the conventions of Canadian cinema, you know? You probably know what I'm talking about when I put it in bunny ears like that. you guys as Canadian filmmakers, what do you expect from yourself and from Canadian cinema itself in the future?
I mean, personally, I'm starting to not be afraid of the future as much as I think it might help in terms of, like, you know, all this technology stuff going on. You know, it's the film industry's in such a flux right now, like really distinct flux. You know, because it's hard to say: are the kids going to the theaters? Are they just going to download it? Like, where's the revenue streams? Like, all those realistic questions.
Yeah.
But because of the opening up of the internet, and you buy a beautiful high definition camera for $500 now, and people learning to make films, I think at the end of the day, I think there's going to be a lot more outlets and a lot more distinct stuff. And a lot of people around the world will know more, like, oh, that's Canadian film. Let's just type in Canada film and Google that and see what comes up. And I mean, I have no idea. Like, we're trying to figure out how to generate some income from this, because it's an artistic endeavor, but it's also an investment.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And it's hard right now to...
And I think that's where the new sort of... the new world of cinema is heading, because of what Brent talked about with being a little more economical for the cameras, for the editing. You can edit in your own home now. Is that before, the control was with either, you know, bigger producers or with the grants foundations, Canadian. So they focused more specifically on Canadian stories, possibly.
Okay, yeah.
Whereas now the potential is, you don't need as much money. You can open it up a bit, find some wider range of topics to make as Canadians. Whether it's, you know, to tell our story about what we think of the rest of the world, not just what we think of of our neighbors in Quebec or, you know. And it's funny, I had pitched a script a few years ago in Toronto to a producer, and his response was, I really like the script, it's really good, but it's too American. And it was just a romantic comedy. I mean, it was, you know, but it was a fun, neat, original romantic comedy, but his response was, it's too American. Yeah. I don't know if I can get the money to do it here in Canada. Yeah. I'm like, what? You like the script, though, right?
He's
like,
does American mean Hollywood? Is that pretty much what he's saying?
Yeah, exactly. I just don't understand the logic. If he's saying it getting funds from Canadian government and grants resources, if he's saying it that way, that's one thing. But if he's saying it's too American, it won't work. Because if it's American, it's going to work. It's going to sell.
Yeah, exactly.
Right? I didn't quite understand what he meant.
In a strange way, it's a compliment.
He liked the script, I just find it's a funny statement for Canadian film, in that we can't be too American, but yet really that's our biggest market. If we really want to make money, we got to be able to sell in America.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So it's kind of a catch-22.
It is. Well, it's definitely, the game is being changed right now. You're saying, it's in a definite flux. You mentioned that you broke the world record for the longest shot. I was just wondering, the status of that. Has there been any updates for the...
No, we're waiting to hear. We've submitted. We had to wait till we actually had an official viewing.
Oh, okay.
To be considered a movie, you know, other than, you know, it could be somebody going out in their backyard and
running around.
So because of being booked in at the screening room, we've contacted Guinness. We have to fill out all the paperwork, get them a copy of the film, and...
It's 4 months. Like, it's a waiting process. They do stuff, and then they give you the judgment.
Yeah, and we beat the record, which was the Russian Ark that you mentioned, by basically a minute. We didn't beat it by much, and we hadn't planned on it either, to be honest. I hadn't thought about it, and it wasn't until the week after we shot that one of the actors actually sent me an email going, "Oh, I was just looking up," and he goes like, "we've got to beat by 1 minute." You know, I hadn't even bothered. I'm like, well, yeah, it's extra publicity for us.
Yeah, that's some good publicity. People looking through the Guinness Book of World Records, they're going to see 21 Brothers. That's good.
Yeah. And we wouldn't have got our names in any other way, so.
What's the plan as far as distribution goes for after 21, after you leave the screening room, which I think just closed up tonight?
It closes tonight.
Yeah.
At this point, we're still looking at film festivals and then finding a distributor from there. It's
a hard thing. If you have any suggestions, it's just banging on doors and sending it out. And
part of the problem, too, is that film festivals depend, too, on certain premieres. Yeah. So we have to be careful if we just put it in a theater. So if I want to, I can submit to film festivals in the States now, and it's still a U.S. premiere, which is what a lot of the festivals want.
Mm-hmm.
And same with Europe. I can submit it to London Independent, which we're planning on doing. I think the deadline is in 2 weeks, so we're going to submit it there as well.
I hope you get into get some world premieres, eh?
TIFF. Well, actually, TIFF. We sent in a work project, version to them because that's
we just need to set
a deadline. Mm-hmm. It's one of those things where if we didn't set a deadline for something, we'd keep procrastinating and trying to tweak things and make it better.
So I guess that concludes our interview. So I wish you both good luck, and hopefully you guys can see 21 Brothers. Is there to anyone at home right now? Is there any way that they can watch the movie? I know it just finished up at the screening.
Not yet, but just type it into the Facebook. Just plug into that page for now, and that's where the updates will come from.
Trailers are on YouTube.
Trailers are there. Yep,
and that's another thing with the festivals. If it gets online, festivals won't look at it. Festivals.
Even for shorts too. So,
So no torrenting, people, please.
Yeah, exactly. We've got it submitted to a few festivals, Kingston as well, which is next March, which is a nice little festival. So hopefully we're hoping to get into them. We should find out in a week or two.
All right, that was an interview between Sebastian Diaz, Parker Mott, and Michael McGuire, the director of 21 Brothers, and Brett Nurse. So thank you very much for coming in. And if you're looking to see the movie.
Yep, this is Parker Mott, and you have been listening to a pre-record interview, so now this is the real thing here, everyone.
This is the real Parker Mott.
We're not
real
lying
Sebastian
this time.
Diaz.
Yes, this was a pre-recorded interview with Brent Nurse and Michael McGuire, the filmmakers behind the new Canadian film, 21 Brothers.
And this is a new show on 101.9 CFRC called Synesthesia, which premieres every week at 4:30. For later episodes, we will also be having more interviews with fellow film critics, professors, and contributors to the Reel Out Film Festival, the Focus Film Festival, and the Kingston Canadian Film Festival.
Yes, and for this radio show, we will also be discussing new and upcoming films playing in Kingston. Also, our segments include something called Indie Circuit, which will be talking about new releases in the independent film to promote this invaluable industry.
Yeah. And finally, we have the Canadian Now segment, which will foray into the Canadian film industry and the history behind it. Some films that we might be discussing would be the new film called Goon.
I'm looking forward to that.
Which premiered at TIFF and is getting some rave reviews. As for next week, we'll be reviewing Haywire, the Steven Soderbergh film, Extremely Loud and Incredibly Close, We Need to Talk About Kevin, and Tinker Tailor Soldier Spy.
Yes, we're going back to the Cold War.
Oh, yes, we are.
And for the Indie Circuit, we will be also talking about The Way in Surviving Progress, which is playing at the Screening Room at the moment. And for Canada Now, we will comment on David Cronenberg's new film, A Dangerous Method. Do you have any Freudian slips you have for me?
I need to do my, I need to read up on my Freud a little bit before the show. So,
yes.
How about that?
Yeah, and lastly, we will conclude today's debut episode with a classic Ennio Morricone song from Gillo Pontecorvo's The Battle of Algiers. Have you seen The Battle of Algiers?
Yes, I have.
Yeah, actually, we watched
first
that
year film.
First year film.
First
that
year
was
film.
Epic. Yes,
yeah, yeah.
Yes.
And then if you guys seen Inglourious Bastards,
yeah.
It's a title.
Yeah, that's the song.
And they use the song in there, which is, I mean, just classic Tarantino. But all right, so you've been listening to Synesthesia on 101.9 CFRC. I'm Sebastian Diaz.
And I'm Parker Mott.
We watch.
You listen.